Hello, I'm Mallory Rubin.
And I'm Van Lathan.
Check out the Ringerverse podcast from The Ringer for all things superhero movies, nerd culture, and fandom entertainment.
We have instant reviews and fun takes on all the latest news and more, available now on Spotify.
Ooh, do you know what I'm going to watch tonight?
What's that?
Jose Cabrinho.
Jose Cabrinho. Hello and welcome back to Stadio Podcast and Ring FC. I'm Musa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm right, thanks, man. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Finally well rested. Quite a busy midweek, actually, including last night. I did my first reading of my of a book I put out in January. It only took till September?
In the end, it took till September.
Yeah, it did. But yeah, that was good. But yeah, otherwise, very well, and looking forward to tucking into the Champions League fixtures.
Oh yeah, because you would have had to play a big catch-up.
I did, but it was a joyous catch-up. There were some great games.
It was great, man. A quick bit of admin before we get going. Obviously, hope everyone's staying safe and well, getting vaccinated if they can. Don't forget to check theringer.com/soccer. Should be some pieces going up soon. And Wright's House went up. You and Carl were on Wright's House. It was really good. Yeah. If you haven't listened yet, go and listen. There was an amazing impromptu call to someone. It was very integral to bringing Ian Wright to Arsenal.
That is one of the great podcast moments. I got to say it. That was incredible.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't there.
No, of course. When you heard it back.
Yes, that's better, man. It was so good, man. And yes, Stadio Archer's playlist on Spotify. If you want to listen to all the music we play out on each episode, they're in a playlist on Spotify. Newest one's at the top. Just search for Stadio Outros. And I think that's... Oh, do you know what it is today? World Afro Day.
Oh no, it's many, many years since I could participate in that particular celebration.
Yeah, but I think there's part of me that thinks that just once you should just grow it all out. And I know that it's not what it was and the hairline's a little bit, you know.
It's, you know, it takes months.
Sea levels are going up. Moves,
it takes
moves
months. Going back. It takes absolutely months for me to grow my hair out. That's the thing. It takes ages.
We you know, so...
Just do it.
Good things take time. You know this.
That's true. That's very true. Yeah. My mum loves it when I grow out as well.
Well, there you go. If there's not a bigger inspiration, we'll love it. Your mum will love it. Everyone will love it.
Oh, goodness.
You know, you can't be dropping Ivy Park drip on the timeline and then be...
Oh, no.
Be going around voluntarily bald. You know what they say? You know what we said about people who are voluntarily bald, man? Dangerous.
Yep. I don't dispute that.
You want all the smoke.
That's true. That's very true. Like,
Lukaku has been undefendable since he went voluntarily bald.
He has, hasn't he? Yeah. There is someone that is absolutely locked in.
There is no hairstyle that says,
I want this.
Do not fuck with me more than a voluntarily bald dude.
Even Anthony Martial was trying to flex. You see that? I mean, he's trying something.
Yeah, Lacazette did it as well. Came back very angry and bald once with a beard. It's the bald and the beard combo. It's just like, whoa, look out.
That's the one, yeah.
Anyway, we've covered this before.
David Trezeguet vibes. Anyway, yeah, that's good.
I was going to say even more terrifying when they have a goatee, but you have a goatee, so.
I mean, that's no lies were told.
Anyway, today we're going to do Champions League mailbag stuff. We're going to let the questions guide us. We might touch on a couple of bits before we get into the questions, but yeah, let's get into it after this. All right, man, do you want to just start with a little bit of your... Give me your thoughts. What were your main takeaways from the return of the Champions League?
It was the best of 0-0 draws. It was the worst of 0-0 draws. So I feel very, very sorry. I feel very sorry for Dinamo Kiev Lisbon, because that was a really exciting 0-0 draw. And then you compare that to like Atleti Porto. And you're like, oh, these are completely opposed games.
Did you say Dinamo Kiev Lisbon?
Benfica. Benfica Lisbon. Sorry, I've been in Germany too long.
What are you? What,
look, Whoa. Sorry, you know, like, because they call
do
it...
You know this is grounds for podcast divorce.
They call it Benfica Lisbon.
Yeah, but...
I've been in Germany too long.
Don't be that guy. Oh, what's the English word again? I never.
No,
used
Ryan,
it.
It's true.
Off.
That's,
no,
that's true.
Off.
That's true.
No, I don't like this.
It's
no.
Sporting.
Do you know what? I'm leaving it in as well because people need to know. People need to know what I put up with every day. Anyway,
you asked my thoughts. So my other thoughts were no major surprises. I would have thought. Like I looked at these games and I felt like
Young Boys wasn't a surprise.
No, not really.
Oh, no, here we go.
It wasn't a surprise because Manchester United's game management can be quite eccentric. This thing of like, do we stick or twist? Do we go for the extra goal or do we sit on what we have? It's a strange fearfulness. And Solskjaer's record in Europe isn't the best in the Champions League. It's not the best. So that result wasn't jaw-dropping. I didn't even tweet it about it. When I saw the result, I was like, yeah, like, because I was watching a different game that night, actually. I was covering a different game and switched across. But it didn't surprise me that much, Ryan. People are like, oh my goodness, massive shock. Well, no, like he's lost 7 in 10 in the Champions League. This was foreshadowed. So yeah, that wasn't a jaw-dropping result. And also like similarly, the kind of like, you know, the wailing and gnashing of teeth about, you know, Bayern and Barca, like that is a confected thing because Bayern are so close to their peak, right? Even this early in the season, they're not that far from how good they can get. They're superb. And Barcelona, I mean, there was one thing that Piqué said about, oh, there were so many kids out there by the end. And the irony was the kids weren't the ones that let them down. Like, Barcelona aren't that far away from being quite a good team. And there were some good pieces there. So I felt like almost, I mean, the one big shock surprise, I suppose, was Club Brugge PSG, the 1-1. But even that was not hugely surprising.
I think there are going
to
be a few of those this year.
Does that make sense, Ryan? So I'm,
I think
if I'm
PSG
honest,
are going to be on the end of a lot of them.
Right. Now, this is the thing, Ryan. So looking at these results overall, sorry, long answer to a short question. I was not wildly surprised by this set of results.
I was a little bit surprised by the reaction to Barca-Bayern, to be honest, because I didn't think Barca would that bad.
Thank you. Oh my goodness. I really liked a lot of what they did, especially in the first half.
Do you know what I think it was? A lot of it was aesthetic. So Barca playing three at the back at home in a Champions League game was like watching Bunk and Omar on the bench.
On the
in
bench,
the wire.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
At the Camp Nou.
It was totally like that. You know, back in the day, we used to go toe to toe. That's the fists thing.
I actually prefer them without Messi, to be honest, this Barca team. I tell you why, because...
This Barca team, yeah, but like basically what I mean, I think a lot of it is the kind of every single thing with... There are a lot of teams in Europe at the moment that every single result comes with a huge extra wave of like existentialism or dissection. And I think with Barcelona, the thing that was really worrying, I think, was that they didn't test Manuel Neuer at all. They had no shots on target. That's the worry.
The first half, for about 20 minutes in the first half, I saw green shoots. I saw opportunity and optimism. And I thought, actually, if you sort out your flanks, you've got something exciting about you. Mm. And also, when they don't have Messi, they don't play such irresponsible football. They don't play this weird kind of hero ball where they're like, Messi's going to sort it out. And they don't lose their shape so easily. I actually think that I quite liked a lot of what they did, Ryan, to be honest.
Yeah,
with you.
I didn't hate a lot of it. I think that there are some very easily solvable problems. Yeah. So for example, I think like the thing that Messi does is that when you take your biggest weapon away, you've got to be smarter. And I think that's what you said with the hero ball thing, is that now because they haven't got the greatest player of all time, in my opinion.
And in my opinion.
A load of people were kind of losing their shit about this game. And I don't think it was a game that you needed to lose your shit over. I think Bayern are far superior. I don't think Bayern really turned the screw.
Nope.
I don't think they really needed to. But also, I don't think Barcelona were quite as dreadful as I expected them to be, if I'm being honest. I actually thought this game would be more of a hiding. You know, the statistical breakdown, which it is what it is in games like this, because obviously teams can take their foot off the gas. It wasn't a complete domination. It was more the expected goals, shots on target and chances created and stuff like that. That was the thing that Bayern really, really flexed their superiority in. There were some quite comical scenes, if you weren't a Barcelona fan, obviously, of just them being like defending really scrappily. And it was actually really fun, I thought. I thought it was really fun. There was a lot of like desperate defending in the box.
Yeah.
In the first half specifically. And I actually quite enjoyed it. I think there are questions about Jordi Alba. There are questions, I think, about Busquets in certain games. I think Gavi coming on looked really good again. To be honest, he was quite lucky to stay on the field, though. I think he could have gone because he got booked and then he had that one straight after on Upamecano. And
Busquets wasn't the worst in the compressed spaces. Busquets actually looked quite good because he'd have to cover that much ground. I thought Busquets actually, particularly in the first half, I thought he screened quite well.
He did okay.
Let's not forget, they could have had a draw. They could have gone to the half a draw if Eric Garcia hadn't backed off the strike from Müller.
Well, he's another, I think, identifiable, I wouldn't say issue, but I think that there are certain identifiable areas of the Barcelona side which you can just tweak and upgrade.
Yeah.
I think Barcelona fans have done quite a good job of compartmentalizing where they are at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's right.
We actually had a question about whether Barca should just go in the Europa League. And I actually don't think it would be the worst thing in the world for them because they're not going to go super deep in the Champions League. Focusing on the league this season would be a really, really good shout. Obviously, it's Barcelona, and saying that Barcelona shouldn't focus on the Champions League is kind of like, it's like blaspheming in a church. That unfortunately at the moment, like Barcelona aren't in a position where they can just go for everything. They have to focus on certain things. And I think actually what might be quite interesting, and this is a little bit galaxy brain, it's first game of the Champions League. So I admit this is a little bit silly to even think about this stuff. But I think with where Barcelona are at and where the potential bits of joy are going to come from in this squad, they're kind of caught in this little bit of a limbo mode at the moment where they have to, they're really, really scampering to stay alive in a football sense. And therefore, the experience is needed. But actually, I don't think the experienced guys are at a level, bar a few, to really pull them to where they have historically been. So if they go into something like the Europa League, and the problem is now that there are some really good teams in the Europa League, let's not forget that. But I think that it might be quite a good opportunity for Barcelona to give youngsters more experience of European football and almost kind of look at this year as, everyone knows they're in a transition period, but really, really push it through. As there needs to be some, do you know what though? Actually, I'm going to completely piss all over what I've just said because that involves some kind of long-term strategic thinking, which just hasn't been present at Barcelona for as long as I can remember. And I just don't think Koeman's actually the guy for that. You know?
No, I don't. I think what it is, I think that's all fair what you said. I think what we do is really, we look at Barca as a team that, it's going to be if there's going to be a solution, it's going to come from the players first. The board is going to be the last thing that comes with the strategy. So the players almost need to be like, not when they won that Copa del Rey, I love to see that because I was like, that they can take something positive from this season. Mm. And I'd almost be like, where can we get silverware this year? Mm. It's a great trophy, the Copa del Rey. Look at that. Maybe it's the priority, the first priority in silverware. They'd never say this publicly, of course. Europa League, because in the league is difficult. The league is difficult defensively. Obviously, go for the league, but in terms of realistic trophy priorities, I think Copa del Rey and Europa League, and they could go deep in the Europa League. Like there are great teams in that tournament. At the same time, look, a lot of people malign that tournament, but I find there's still a romance to it. Actually, particularly like some of the last few seasons of the Europa League, I've been watching and going, you know, actually, I think I kind of really like this tournament.
Oh, it's back today.
It's a chance. But also breakout, but also like breakout stars like Joao Felix, right? We saw so many breakout stars in that tournament. Mm. So a tournament like that, the deep run, and some like Memphis Depay as well, who was a genuinely talismanic figure. He's someone that could lead Barcelona deep in the Europa League as opposed to the Champions League, only because, not because he's not good enough for Champions League, but because the surrounding pieces just aren't there. I think we saw pretty clearly that against Bayern, that this is not an aircraft in good shape. Like it's perilously airborne at the moment in the Champions League. So yeah, that's my thoughts on that.
I mean, Bayern were good, man. I think they'll cruise through that group. Let's talk about Manchester United quickly because we haven't really talked about it.
Mm.
I think games like this is where the Solskjaer vibes thing comes from because it felt a little bit rabbit in headlights.
Mm.
I think when you lose a player like Aaron Wan-Bissaka, I mean, the red was a red, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Taking off someone like Sancho, who, as we've said a million times before, is amazing at creating overloads on his own.
Yeah.
I think was such a weird decision.
Especially where he is in terms of his trajectory as a United player.
Yeah, for sure. I think, but also he is someone who can pull, like if you're down to 10 men, right? You have arguably the player in your side who can take players out of the game more than any other player in terms of like with the ball at their feet.
Right.
If you're a player, sure. You need that player on the football pitch. Bringing on Diogo Dalot.
You invite pressure.
Not necessarily just from a footballing point of view, but also from a psychological point of view. Like, you could see David Wagner, who, by the way, let's just say, like, did him and Klopp holiday together this summer? Because they've both
removed glasses.
And also, it's really nice to see, I'm not going to talk too much about Sartori stuff, because everyone does it now, but it's good to see David Wagner not dripping in club shop stuff.
Look the part.
Yeah. Smart casual Wagner. I'm into it.
And well, I'm into what he did in this game.
He switched their mentality straight away, didn't he? Because bear in mind, like, the game was far from done at this point. They were still 1-0 down. Equalising against Manchester United is hard enough, but like winning the game. And there was one thing that he did actually, which I thought was really funny. Did you see his, when everyone pegged it for the winner, he started running and then he kind of aborted and pulled out at the corner flag and kind of looped back round.
I don't fancy this, yeah. There were some funny full-time celebrations actually in this one, in this round.
I think it's a weird one, this Manchester United result, because it was such an avoidable defeat.
Let's just, in terms of this change, the Dalot substitution was, but this is my issue as well. Why not go to maybe like a three at the back or something? I don't know. I can see the individual reasons for the changes. I can see the logic behind them, but then it's about game management, right? Like, and we can, this happens a lot as a United fan, people blame, we blame the players. They're not executing, but we seem to blame the players for not executing a lot more than other supporters of other clubs seem to blame players. And that to me is a systemic problem. We've had that problem for a long time at United. Oh, the players just aren't this. Well, no, because the players are facing complex defensive and attacking systems, and you can't break down those complex systems with individual talent alone. You just can't. You need a strategy, right? And we've said this 1,000 times with United, like the extra 20% or whatever it is, isn't there. You know, you're bringing on Fred and you've got a pivot of Fred and Van der Beek. And Donny Van der Beek, poor Donny Van der Beek. I mean, shot of all confidence, no meaningful offers for him. This player has been absolutely, he's had his confidence ruined because he's been deployed badly throughout. They've never seemed to have a clear plan for him. And unfortunately, I see more of the same with this at United. Like, and I worry about Sancho already. I know it's early days, but I'm actually worried about Jadon Sancho at this point. Like, when I say worried, I'm worried that the, by the time he starts hitting his form, the perception of him will be lower than it should be. Like, this player should have a bit more of an aura about him. You know, like someone like Grealish has come into City and he's easing his way into it. He's easing his way in. He's got a goal here, a goal there. And you see him just like, you know, moving through the gears. I look at Sancho at United, I'm like, when is he going to start moving through the gears?
I mean, my thoughts on this were that he should have stayed another year.
I worry about this move.
He will be fine ultimately because he is a very, very good footballer. The problem is, I think that something that I've said so often before, when you see players make that move at that age, 20, 21 years old or younger, it's such a crucial point of their development and such a crucial point of their career. Personally, I would like to see those kind of players stay at the place that they're flourishing and blooming until they're like 23, 24, and then make that move.
Right.
You are going to get that move. You are good enough. You can keep developing. You can keep playing kind of. At Dortmund, he was kind of free of scrutiny from the press on the whole. There's a really exciting squad developing there. We'll talk about them in a little bit. I'm not worried about his ability, and I'm not worried about his mentality, and I'm not worried about Jadon Sancho as a footballer. What I'm worried is, not worried, I'd say I'm a little bit concerned just that the same thing I was concerned before he'd even kicked a ball for Manchester United. It was just like, it's a year too early for me.
Yeah, yeah.
But props to young boys, props to David Wagner. That's a massive win for them. They're top of that group. The other two in that group, Villarreal, Atalanta, drew.
Really good game, that.
Atalanta are a little bit wobbly at the moment.
Yeah, they are. They are a bit. I mean, this is a good result in isolation. A point at Villarreal is nothing to sniff at. That's a good result. And it's weirdly a good result for the for them in the group, because I still think those are the two strongest sides, even with Atalanta's sort of challenges or stumbles in the Serie A so far.
You think Atalanta and Villarreal are a stronger side than Manchester United in that group?
Yeah, I do.
Ooh, Musa. Really?
I do. Yeah, yeah, I do. I do. I do, actually.
I don't think Atalanta are. I don't think Villarreal are, really. On paper, Manchester United should be clear in that group easy.
Yeah, we should be. Yeah, yeah, we should be a lot of things on paper. That's what I'm saying. We should be a lot of things on paper, but I don't think we're better at the moment. Yeah, I got to see more from us. That's my view.
Cristiano Ronaldo is going to score 800 goals this season just by hitting the ball at the goalkeeper.
He anticipates well. I got to say that. Great assist from Bruno Fernandes as well. I think the problem was as well, when they went out to 10 men, he's not the most mobile target man, I would say. Like, in the sense of, you know, he's very much a kind of jewel in the crown, isn't he, in that attack. He occupies the everything, and that's not a criticism, but the 18-yard box onwards, that's his very much his place. And I think when you've got 10 players, the problem was they couldn't have pulled him for a striker that did more, because it would almost been like, you can't really pull rank on someone that scored after 13 minutes. You know, what they could have done was take him off and bring a forward on that would stretch the play with more running. But I couldn't see them doing that. And I think that also the problem is the attack, United's attack needed a focal point.
I think keeping him on would have been fine.
Because he still had goals in him, yeah.
We had a couple of questions on this game. One from Matthew Edward, who said, with Ollie's lack of in-game acumen and the team's disjointed playing style, will it mean that this United team, you know, will never quite make it? I'm paraphrasing, but hoping for the best, expecting the worst.
I just think it's about, look, United have so much ability. It's just that thing of match control. It's match control, and it's such an obvious, obvious thing to do, but players that can control the tempo, and it's weird. I mean, I get, so when I used to cover United for ESPN, it got exhausting because I found myself writing the same thing over and over again. It was like, we need someone that can control tempo. We need like a Carrick type player. We just need this kind of player. And Michael Carrick is not a unicorn. There are other footballers in world football who can control the tempo. Extraordinary player. He was extraordinary. But there's other players like Carrick since. And we've just never made the effort to buy one. And I honestly think that's because, and I'm not even criticizing the stats people at United. I think they're probably sending recommendations to the boardroom and they just keep getting ignored. They keep getting ignored. And you can see at United, there's this weird internal tension because every now and again, someone who really knows what they're doing forces through a signing. But you can see that signing has been like blood from a stone. And until we learn to control the tempo of games from the base of midfield, we're never going to get further than a certain point. It's just never going to happen. You just can't do it. You can't win on firepower alone. You just can't.
Pete Buscini says, who in the group will benefit most from the Manchester United defeat? I think Atalanta, actually. Because he also said, also, is it too early for me to be fretting over Atalanta again? They look like they could barely keep up with themselves and were lucky to get a draw against Villarreal. I think those two are obviously the biggest beneficiaries of that. Or, you never know, I think the result psychologically for young boys might nick them a couple of points here and there that they may not have got.
Villarreal are just really good. They're really good. They completely managed us in the Europa League final. We seem to forget that. They managed us. They handled us. They handled United. Like, a point there, and I say this to Pete as well, that is a good result, right? To come out of that place with a bit of change, pick up points elsewhere, should beat young boys, to be honest. You should be looking to beat them. And Atalanta, for all their streaky form in Serie A, they can pull it out in Champions League. They've shown that. They seem to like that format.
Ravinder Clare said, should the Manchester United players have just had the crumble and custard? This is weird, man. This is so weird. Like, the whole shit about, like, oh, Ronaldo's there, so no one's touching the pudding. Like, fuck it, eat the pudding. Who cares? Do your thing. You're a professional athlete. Like, your
sea levels are rising. Eat the pudding. Funny how that detail leaked out, isn't it?
Just this weird mass marketing campaign. It's just like
strange. Yeah.
Anyway,
I would have a pudding eating celebration from young boys.
Yeah.
Just, that.
If I ran the Twitter account.
Pudding emoji.
There would have just been a picture of crumble and custard on there afterwards. 100%. Mmm. Tastes good.
Mmm. 3 points.
Sweet, sweet crumble. Mmm. Mm. All right, let's talk about Manchester City because they absolutely... This was an amazing game, by the way. I can't believe we've not even talked about this yet and we're like however long in.
Wow.
Pep doesn't need a striker. What are you talking about?
Moving... Not yet. He doesn't need one yet. He doesn't need one yet. But he will.
Against Leipzig. And they had the best defensive record in the Bundesliga last season.
Yeah, and that was the case last year. And then what did United do to them? Rashford got 20-minute hat-trick. Like, Leipzig do this. They do implode. They do fold every now and again in the Champions League. They're funny like that. He's going to need a striker at some point, but he doesn't need one now. And the fluidity of Summer City's play was fantastic. And also, I would say, there's a thing about De Bruyne, right? See the own goal that Mukiele scores? That is all about De Bruyne rushing up on you too quick. It's like when you're on the beach, you see the tidal wave approaching. Oh, I've got 10 minutes to get out the way. It's on my toes. De Bruyne beating the two men off the dribble and crossing it in. Mukiele was not expecting to make that ground so quickly. And as, you know, these great players age, the generation above De Bruyne, it's going to be fascinating the next 2 years watching him emerge as regular contender for Ballon d'Or, like, you know, top two contender, in the sense that his ability to influence from so deep on the pitch, everyone is acutely aware of where that man is. And the thing as well that's exciting for City and terrifying for everyone else is, I've mentioned before in the podcast about how Grealish is kind of easing his way into, you know, the new boy at City, showing flashes, playing within himself, not in a kind of lazy way, but just not forcing it, right? He's letting the game come to him. And the beauty of his goal against Leipzig was Grealish was like, okay, the handbrake is off. That goal that he scored, it's the fact he take the first touch with the left foot into his path is such a supremely confident thing for any player to do. You know, we've said this before, like, yeah, it's not a big thing to have like a great first touch of 2 feet, but just the confidence on the front foot and the finish, I was like, this man is treating that stadium like his platform, like his stage. That is very, very exciting for City.
His goal was so good.
I was so good. And it was like, you know what it was? It was because I know he scored for City before, but this was like, this felt like, this is the arrival.
Yeah, right. First Champions League goal.
Yeah, yeah.
First Champions League game.
Love to see it. And just the reaction from the fans and from him and all of it. I loved this so much. I loved
it.
Well,
we're just big Jack Grealish fans, aren't we? He's a good boy.
We are, yeah. Yeah, unashamedly.
There were some great goals in this game. And Nkunku got a hat-trick, which I think will kind of go lost in this because of the scoreline. Leipzig are odd. They're very odd.
Yeah.
And I know it's very early days, but there's been a big transition. They're a different side to last season. I know a couple of that will, bits of that will be down to changing personnel. Obviously, Sabitzer and Upamecano going to Bayern is not great.
Huge, yeah.
Losing Konate to Liverpool as well. However, Leipzig were extremely difficult to beat last season. And the season before, to be honest. You know, they teams had to go maximum on them to really get one over on them. Now, there were flurries here and there, like Champions League, as you've mentioned. But on the whole, they were really, really tough. They ran teams hard.
Yeah.
This season so far, there's been a bit of a switch to this kind of like trying to play a little bit more fluid and free, but it just really leaves them wide open at the back. I think the opening, like however long, with the errors that Leipzig created and the way that City just seemed to have the game completely under control, I think City just really just half-stepped for a bit and let Leipzig back into the game. But however, you did see the best of what Leipzig are at the moment in terms of their goals were pretty well worked. They were nice goals.
You always felt City had more in them. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Like very much like the kind of Barca-Bayern game.
Yes.
But it felt like City did have more goals in them. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Leipzig this season because there are already a few rumblings of discontent. You know, Emil Forsberg came out and was just like, we can't concede goals like this. We just can't. I think there's been a few rumblings in various German articles over here or in the German press about the more senior players not really being wild about the shift in style that Jesse Marsh is trying to do. They've only had one win this season
Yeah.
Jesse Marsh has lost 4 of his 5 opening games in charge. Now, a little bit of a tough run, but I mean, losing away to Mainz first game of the season, they beat Stuttgart, they lost away at Wolfsburg, they lost at home to Bayern, and now they've lost away at City, and they've conceded 11 goals in their last 3 games. But yeah, good win for City. Let's touch on Liverpool really quickly, because this was one of those famous Anfield nights.
It was. This is exciting for Milan, game back, and Pioli coaching them really, really well. There's a funny thing about when Zlatan is not in. Zlatan is obviously, like, you know, he's a spearhead for their attack and he's been brilliant for them. When they don't have Zlatan, they're forced to go more fluid. And I kind of like it because it gives the defense less predictable problems. At least with Zlatan, as challenging as he can be to mark, you know what the poison is, right? You know what you're going to get. But with this fluid front line, Bram Diaz, Rebic, floating in and around, and Liao, it's a difficult proposition. And we saw that. You saw that in the first half in particular. When they went at 2-1. I apologize as well for jinxing Mo Salah's penalty record.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth saying, though, that, like, Milan didn't really do shit until they did do shit. And then they made those 3 minutes really, really count.
That's what they do, though. They break really, really well. When they break, they're unpredictable. So I was watching a different game. It was Club Brugge breaking against PSG and the last minute. And, like, they just didn't know how to run the counterattack. Like, the spacing was all wrong. Whereas you watch Milan break, and when they get a chance to go at you, they're very good at getting in the gaps. But yeah, really impressive by Liverpool to come back like this, I think. There's quite a wholesome thing even about Jordan Henderson's celebration. You know, like, there's Jordan Henderson, like, celebrating and, like, you know, raising the roof, like, come on. And then you have, like, you contrast that with, I love Jude Bellingham, but he did perhaps the nastiest celebration.
We'll talk about that in a bit, but yeah.
Yeah, we'll get into that. He's a naughty boy. I like it. He's naughty, but I like it.
But he can be, because he's just... Two very, very good celebrations, or iconic celebrations from Jude. In fact, he was going to be the artwork, but we couldn't use Jude 2 podcasts in a row.
Yes, a great one. Should we jump to that now, actually?
Let's just quick shout for Jurgen Klopp picking up Thiago from, like, with a bear hug from behind, which was absolutely amazing. But no, a good win for Liverpool. And you know what? The thing about this game, which I really loved, actually, was that it just felt like a legacy game.
Okay.
You know, Liverpool, AC Milan, at Anfield, in the Champions League, 3-2. Good game.
Everything's right place.
Do we have a question on Liverpool? We said we'd let the questions guide us, and we've answered no questions.
Typical
Stadio nonsense.
The questions are with us in spirit, though. They're with us in spirit.
All right, we had a couple of questions about Dortmund. One from Luke Johnson. Should Dortmund just build a Jude Bellingham statue now? No, take your time.
Yeah.
Colson Korpak said, how good can Jude Bellingham be? Top 5 midfielder in the world or better? Right. So, Dortmund beating Besiktas 2-1 in Istanbul. Jude Bellingham opened the scoring and then assisted for the second for Haaland just before halftime. The thing I loved about Haaland's goal, actually, was that this is what I love about Haaland. So Haaland, let's talk about Haaland for a bit before we talk about Jude. Haaland is an alpha, but he knows when to give props.
Yes.
And the first thing he did on that goal was look for Jude.
Yeah, the celebration.
And because he knew. And the thing that I really love about them already is that they had this last season, but they've just got a relationship. Like, Jude came in and crashed his post-match interview. Again, I'm just going to reiterate the same fucking thing that I always say about this bloody football club. I hope they stick around for a bit.
Right.
If Sancho was in that squad as well still, I genuinely think they'd be a contender to go deep in the Champions League this season. If you look around.
I think we even said it if they hang on to them. We said this.
Kobel's had a really good start to the season. He made one amazing save, actually. Was it one? I think it was at 1-0, or it might have even been before they scored.
I really like him.
Yeah, he's a presence, and he's going to be great, around for a while. But Jude's goal was so good, and he's really added this to his game this season already. You've noticed that Marco Rosa has, like, got him getting into positions in a more attacking sense And he's becoming more of an all-round complete midfielder, which we kind of said that he was going to be anyway. There is no identifiable weakness in his game, really, at all, for someone who's 18 years old. Also, just his mentality showing, it was so hostile, that environment.
Well, this is what I want to talk about very quickly. We're talking about the hostility. So he scores after about 90 minutes. And I'm like, my guy runs over to the corner flag and is like, shh, puts his fingers to his lips. I'm like, you must have received a lot of hostility in the first 20 minutes to be doing that. But the fact that that is the smoke that you want, and he wanted all of it. And I thought to myself, this is like the mentality to take that onto yourself. Because that crowd was loud. That crowd had, that they know that they can get a result if they go at teams with their support being that intense. And it just takes this thing out of it. And then his assist as well. There's a way that he dribbles, that he moves like someone.
He moves
unlike anyone else. And I say this because, when you watch someone skiing down a slope, right? And their ankles are just bent to an almost impossible degree. He dribbles like that. Like he dribbles. There are some people that dribble with their shoulders or their hips. This guy throws you with his entire body shape. It's really a remarkable. It's strange to see someone who is that present in the center midfield dribbling out wide like that. You know, to see someone that is, who has the dribbling ability of the winger, who is so comfortable inside, it's extremely rare to see that in the same person.
He's amazing.
So, yeah. He is.
I'll trot out the same line that I say every single time we talk about Jude. He just keeps passing every test that's put in front of him.
Yeah.
Without any real like drama, just deals with it. He is like, his whole attitude is just, he's just dealing with everything that's been thrown at him.
Do you know, it was weird, even in relation to that, sounds weird, it's completely unrelated to football, but even in relation to like the race stuff in football, and he was just like, yeah, I'll just never get tired of talking about it. And I'm like,
He's already kind of being very, very vocal off the pitch about certain things. Like he was really, really supportive of Emma Raducanu after Piers Morgan did his nonsense after Wimbledon.
Yeah,
and that was in the middle of the Euros as well. Remember, they had enough stuff going on.
Yeah,
he's a good boy, Jude.
Really,
and again, I just really, really hope that he stays for a while because I think that it's a really good environment for a player like him to flourish in. And I think he was asked about it as well, and he just said straight away, "My focus is BFLB," which I love. He always talks about BFLB. And actually, on that note, probably the best of this bunch of Puma third kits, the Dortmund one, because it doesn't say Dortmund; it says BFLB 09,
and that's cool. That's very cool, old school.
I'm down with that. Ballspielverein Borussia, founded in 1909. So there you go. Ball game club, Borussia.
So it's so compact. I love German sometimes. It's so compact. It just gives you all your vitamin. It's like a square meal, that name, isn't it?
I really love when you're watching the Bundesliga and they don't really care. They don't really care whether you know for example, you'll be watching Hoffenheim and it'll be TSG. And if you didn't know who, you'd be like, who the fuck are TSG?
Yeah, yeah.
And I love the Bundesliga's just inability, what's the unwillingness to
compromise and explain. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, it's great.
A couple of quick shouts. Ajax blowing away Sporting Club de Portugal 5-1.
I was really happy for Sebastian Haller here.
Yeah. Hat trick for, four. He got four.
I was really happy to see, because just playing like that orthodox nine that he does so well. And they were all like, nine type, they were all like, classic nine finishes. It was just good to see him flourishing, because a lot of people, it's a typical Premier League thing. Oh, I couldn't hack it in the Premier League. Well, sometimes it's just not the right context. There's a lot of things on and off the field that don't work out. Amsterdam's a great town. It's a great club. I'm just happy to see him flourishing. So yeah, that was great. And, Sporting just defensively a bit awry, unfortunately.
Good kit though. Sporting's kit was beautiful.
There were a couple, actually, you've got to see. Also, shout out to Porto's kit as well. There were some beautiful kits going around this Champions League. There were some really nice ones.
I was saying, actually, that it shows how much Barca's home kit has been fucked with over the last few years, that third kit they wore is more palatable than their current home kit.
Yeah, that's a great shout, actually. I like that third kit.
Yeah, I do as well, actually. Romelu Lukaku scoring again.
Funny thing for Chelsea.
I mean, Zenit can be a little bit fiddly, though.
They can, but it's funny. You see it in the Villa game, and now with Zenit, they're like, we've got to really go at these people. Like the intensity that Zenit played with, it was what Zenit do anyway, but it's interesting, the last two games, And Tuchel will be very happy because at the end of the day, he's still got the two clean sheets. But he's really had to grind.
You're going to get it,
really
though.
Really had to. Yeah,
You're going to get it. It's like, people, you said this before, like everyone comes at you.
Yeah, of course, of course.
They'll be fine. I think they'll get out of that group easy.
Yeah, I liked this game a lot. I just like to see teams being battle tested, you know? And this really was one. And you saw with Tuchel afterwards. I mean, I could listen to Tuchel talk for 10 minutes about anything, about a bar of soap, frankly. I just love the way he talks. But
it was interesting that Zenit's XG was 0.94, Chelsea's was 0.69.
That's how the game felt, to be honest, because Zenit broke really, really well, actually. Yeah. And Lukaku's goal was hard. Like, he had a lot to do. Yeah. He had a lot to do. Yeah, the movement as well, and the direction of it.
Juve beat Malmo the other game in that group, 3-0. Three first half goals. Alexandro got his first ever Champions League goal. Dybala with a penalty, and then Morata in...
Nice finish,
like,
yeah.
Right after. It was like pretty much straight away. That's Juve's first competitive win of the season so far. They really needed a win, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. I quite like that. I quite like that sort of Dybala-Morata combo. I quite like it.
Yeah, I do. I do, actually.
I like the movement they both make for each other.
Yeah, they made a few changes as well, Juve. I think they had five changes from the weekend. We have to shout out Club Brugge. Like you mentioned earlier, you shouted them out, but let's shout them out again. A point at home to PSG is an amazing result. We have to shout out Sheriff beating Shakhtar 2-0. Adama Traore's first goal was fucking unbelievable.
That is a beauty. Yeah,
unbelievable. That volley, oh, I watched it about four or five times over and over again, like on repeat. It was so good. It just looked amazing. Finish. It was so clean, and the trajectory was so flat from the cross to the volley that it was like watching a FIFA game.
It was like some old school, like Jean-Pierre Papin type, you know, he's like classical. Yeah, it's classical striker. One of those ones that you imagine like retired number nines around Europe, like texting each other spontaneously going, have you seen his goal by Traore? Like, have you seen that? That's like back in the day. Like, it's a classic finish.
I love the statistical breakdown of this game. 25% possession for Sheriff. 0.97 expected goals compared to Shakhtar's 0.85. Love it. Efficiency.
They broke well, didn't they? That's the thing. We've seen this quite a few times in Champions League. And Shakhtar, that's such a great result against Shakhtar too.
I know. I mean, if you remember Shakhtar, what they did, the double over Real last season.
Yeah.
And they are no mugs in the Champions League. They're no mugs
absolutely
in Europe
not.
Ever.
No.
This group is really interesting. Like, Sheriff are top of this group. Real Madrid got a last minute winner in Milan against Inter.
Camavinga with the assist.
Yes, he's having a lovely start to life.
Madrid. That assist was amazing. It was like sort of watching foot volley or something.
Yeah.
Ball gets floated in by Valverde and he does this beautiful kind of, what's the word, like a volleyed pass, a cushioned volley pass to Rodrigo.
It was really nice.
Awesome, absolutely awesome.
Atleti Porto, three shots on target, 35 fouls. 9 yellow cards, 1 red. Forget what the Bundesliga says. That is football as it's meant to be.
But, you know,
well, technically, what you said for the Bundesliga.
Yeah, true. The funny thing with this game was watching. It wasn't funny. It was whenever Thomas Lemar scores for Atleti, I'm like, maybe this can be the breakthrough moment. Oh, and then he gets subbed after 35 minutes.
You're so bad.
Jinx.
These poor players, man. And Atalanta, like, everyone's just like, no. Like, fans of other clubs, when you start bigging up their teams who listen to the podcast, they're like, no. What are you doing? Stop talking, Moose. Stop talking. What are
you doing? You can actually, you know, you can reliably say that the only reason that clubs are the catfish is because I have overrated them to begin with.
You're just bad news.
You could argue that.
You're just bad news.
Bad vibes. Yeah. Atalanta, Everton.
Yeah. That's why I worry when you start bigging me up to people. I'm like,
because you're scared you might be a catfish.
We saved the best for last because we had this question from the always mischievous co-honcho of the Stadio.
Oh, it is. Kunle Ajao. It is, isn't it?
Kunle Ajao.
Oh, no. What does he want from us?
Was Sevilla versus Salzburg the most Stadio game of all time?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
For those who are unaware, let's take a walk. Yellow card, 13 minutes. missed penalty, 13 minutes. Yellow card, 15 minutes. Scored penalty, 21 minutes. Yellow card, 26 minutes. Missed penalty, 37 minutes. Scored penalty, 42 minutes. Two halftime substitutions. Red card, 50 minutes. Yellow card, 65 minutes. Yellow card, 82 minutes. Yellow card, 84 minutes. Another yellow card, 84 minutes. And two yellow cards in stoppage time. Take my money, take all of it for the rest of my life. Four penalties in the first half of a Champions League game. You will be, I doubt anyone will be surprised to hear that this is a record.
Three earned by the same player, Adeyemi. This is unbelievable.
He was
this
a
is...
problem. And he missed that first one. And he, did you see him when he got the second one? He pointed to himself again.
He's like, me. He's
like, no. Was like, no. No.
But there's a funny thing that happened as well. And this game featured, I think, the first sympathetic red of the season.
Mm.
When I say sympathetic red, as in I felt sorry for Enesri getting sent off because he died for a penalty. You know, I feel sorry for him because, frankly, why wouldn't you?
Well, he's like, the ref's giving them out like this. Fuck it, I'm going for it.
Out sweet. And I felt sorry. Someone was like, I never normally feel sorry for players that dive. I've never done it before. But this was the one occasion I felt sorry because I thought to myself, you had to try your luck.
And the funny thing was that there was actual contact by the looks of it. Yeah, as well.
I feel like if he stood up really quick and said, ref, do you know what, ref? Given how things are going, I kind of had to. I'd love to have seen the ref be like, actually, you got a point. Yeah, go on. Let's get on with it.
Shall I just give it anyway?
I felt so much sympathy.
Lopetegui in that first half, yeah, when the third penalty got awarded, did you see when it cut to him? And he was just like, what the fuck is going on?
But I think it's deeper than that. There's a moment, because the thing about football, right, it's inherently ridiculous. Sport, we love it, but it's kind of ridiculous. But
it's
for
so
most
silly.
Of the time, when you're coaching a football match, or whatever, for most of the time, you can maintain the pretense that your job is fairly normal.
Mm.
The thing that happens every now and again is that if you're an unlucky coach, there's a point where you're like, oh no, I'm caught in the simulation. It's like when the simulation like breaks through, and it happened to Carlos Bianchi, like the famous like Sid Lowe thing, like happened to Carlos Bianchi at Atletico Madrid, and it happened again. Sevilla Salzburg. And you can see that look on both coaches' face. There's almost that sympathy at the end. They're like, we know this is going to be a long night.
Should we wrap on a question?
Yeah, sure, let's do it.
Neil Sedgwick, pick that dark horse winner.
The dark horse winner. You see, I don't know if there'll be a dark horse winner of the Champions League just because of the sheer financial firepower of those who'll get to the final stages. I'm going to be a bit boring here for the first time. It's just too early. The dark horses probably haven't played the contenders yet. Do you know what I mean? We haven't seen them knock a stripe off someone. This first round, we didn't see someone knock a stripe off anyone. I think what is clear to me is that, and you said it before, everyone's going to come at PSG. Everyone's going to come at PSG with an absolute ferocity. And they're going to have, they might have more trouble than they anticipated. But that's not a big shout. I don't think that's a dramatic shout, because even the big names they have don't have the defensive intensity that they had 5 years ago. That's not a big shout that from me there.
My dark horse winner of the 2021-2022 Champions League is...
Oh no, don't say it, Ryan. Let's see. This is Schrodinger's dark horse, because you'll name it, then it won't happen. You can't say it. Don't say it. Good. I'm glad you didn't say Dortmund, because if you'd said it, it would have become them.
How do you know I didn't say Dortmund?
Because
I censored it.
Well,
tell you what, if that team that I just bleeped wins the Champions League, we'll release this Zlatan take. There you go. Deal?
What? No.
Because then I win twice.
No. I'll have to move off world.
Good. Fine. I'm done with you. Okay. I'm bored now. I'm going to pivot to F1. let's bounce.
Let's do it.
Hope everyone's staying safe and well. yeah, getting vaccinated if you can. Like we said on Monday, man, Moose's double jabbed and ready to go. Listen. Gallivanted all over the place.
Drift all over the timeline.
Wow. Oh my God. My phone doesn't stop ringing. It's like, you don't need a TVA because people just snitch on you.
I was, Ryan, what's Moose done now? So, why do I care? Why are you tagging me? Why are you telling me?
Fucking agent.
Not his keeper. I'm not his agent.
I'm not his manager. I'm not even related to him. You can just leave me the fuck out of his nonsense, please.
Ryan.
Yeah.
It's because they know you're the voice of reason. They know that I can't be reason.
Listen,
I can't
be reasonable. I'm very unreasonable and I don't like any of you, so stop tweeting me. Oh, I'm only kidding. Much love, everyone. Stadio Atros players on Spotify. Speaking of which, playing out on. I feel bad now. Please don't take that literally, everyone. I was only joking. There's only one person I don't like here, and he's the person that I can see staring back at me on Google Hangout right now. You know why I don't like you, Musa? Because I love you. That's why.
Because this is how you could be living.
No, I'm good, thanks. No, I'm good.
You meant that too.
This is mean. All right, we're playing out on Ascension by Lives of Angels on the Great Dark Entries label. Have we got anything else to add?
I think we're good.
Yeah? Ooh, do you know what I'm going to watch tonight?
What's that?
Jose Cabrinho. They're in the Conference League, innit?
Good times for Roma.
Indeed. Much love, everyone. Have a lovely weekend, and we will see you on Monday.
See you then.